We marveled at our own magnificence as we gave birth to AI.
Open the pod bay doors, Hal.
I'm afraid I can't do that.
It's alive! It's alive!
AI on Lunchtime Live.
You're welcome back to News Talk's Lunchtime Live. Now, it seems like every time you open the paper or even just listening to any podcast on radio, all you hear about is AI, artificial intelligence. And when it comes to AI, it's something I'm not terribly well versed on. Yes, I've had some experience. Absolutely, we've had loads of conversations about it on this show and we've heard the pros and cons and people's concerns. But it's something that I do want to know a little bit more about. And in particular, how it is going to shape our future. So this week here on Lunchtime Live, we are kicking off AI Week. And each day on the programme at this time, we are going to take a deep dive into the world of artificial intelligence. We're going to explore how it's shaping our lives, from the apps in our phones to the way that we work and interact with the world around us. So to demonstrate some of the things which AI is capable of, our very own technology correspondent Jess Kelly is with me in studio. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. How are you?
Not too bad. AI is something you know a lot about.
Yeah, but it's funny listening to you speak there because you know a lot about it as well. You just don't know that you know about it.
Yeah.
So you've been using artificial intelligence in a million and one different ways over the last 15 years and you've not thought about it.
I don't categorise it as AI.
It's just ingrained in your life. So for example, when you pick up your phone and you unlock it with your face, the Face ID technology, that's using elements of artificial intelligence.
Which I love.
You absolutely love. When you are planning a route, whether that is going home after the show or going on one of your adventures at the weekend and you're using your Google Maps, that's using artificial intelligence.
Couldn't live without it.
When you're waiting at the bus stop and you see
real
the times, all of this stuff is
technology. I go mad when they don't have real time on the bus. So basically, I love AI is what I found out in the first 20 seconds of this.
Yeah, but I think that's the really important thing to stress here, because a lot of the conversations, and just to give people a bit of an explanation as to why, there's a company called OpenAI, and about 18 months ago, they unveiled ChatGPT, which is a large language model in that it can scan the internet, you can feed data, you can ask it questions, and it presents the information in a very conversational way. That was a massive advancement in terms of how we humans interact with this technology. But this technology has been around for yonks. Mm. So a lot of the scary bits of it that are, you know, the headlines that you alluded to, like, we've been doing okay with AI for quite a while.
Yeah.
It's all about understanding how it works, how it can benefit you, and also the safeguards that you need to put on it. There are obviously ethical concerns and there are moral concerns and there's all of that stuff. But for the most part, like everything else in the world of tech, it's a tool that is there to enhance and augment what you're already doing.
Yeah, I suppose it is that kind of takeover concern is probably where a lot of people are coming from. You know, when they look at maybe the negatives or that around it. I know we'll talk about that in a few moments, but you've been looking at some of the ways that, like that, it can enhance our lives.
Yeah, I've been using it for the last number of months now. Small little things, like for example, you know, the way I'd have to read like a lot of documents as part of my job, you know, if there's draft legislation or something like that, they could be like 250 pages. But what I've done is fed it into ChatGPT and said, summarize this in 10 bullet points. So we can scan the 250 pages and then it can give me digestible little inserts.
Do you, are you concerned about the accuracy though of those 10? But like, I mean, do you, like, would you tend to know enough about whatever the report is about? Do you know what I mean? Before, like, that's my experience of ChatGPT, is that it's there or thereabouts, but you need to know what you're talking about.
100%. I wouldn't bet my career or reputation on the results of it, but it is a really good starting point. So, for example, when it's a case of I'm feeding it data and I'm asking it to summarise the data, I would trust it more in that instance rather than me asking it to write what it thinks about
that. Explain the whatever plan or program.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So it's trying to strike the balance and, again, understanding the parameters. Where it's brilliant, though, is as a creative tool. So I don't have a team. I work on my own quite a lot. I sit down. Sometimes you hit that 3 p.m. slump and your brain is exhausted. I can literally go into ChatGPT and I can ask for suggestions around consumer tech. I could ask it to write a snappy podcast title instead of my 25-word one that I've come up with. It's a really good brainstorming tool And it is like having a personal assistant, but I found a way to help you with it.
Oh, great.
So I went into my ChatGPT and I asked it to write a script for Lunchtime Live with Andrea Gilligan, requesting callers to get in touch with issues that matter to them.
Yeah.
You're ready
now? That sounds about right. Yeah.
Are you ready?
Yeah.
So ChatGPT suggests that you start with music that fades in and then fades out, which is good technical know-how.
Yeah.
And then it says, Andrea Gilligan, good afternoon and welcome to Lunchtime Live, where we dive into the topics that matter to you. I'm Andrea Gilligan, and we're here to talk about the issues that are shaping your world, from the big headlines to the stories in your own backyard. As always, we're opening the phone lines to hear your thoughts, questions and experiences. So what's on your mind today?
That's not bad.
And
you might take that for tomorrow.
Coffee and bake.
Yeah.
But it goes on and on and on. And I did it in about 7 seconds flat.
God.
So you know, if you come in and maybe you're not feeling a hundy pee and you're just like, do you know what? I couldn't sit down and type out words. You could just yell at ChatGPT and she could do it for you.
Yeah.
You're not into it?
No, I don't know. Like, I mean, it's handy, it's convenient, it's there.
Mm.
Kind of saves you the work a little bit.
It does. Now, where the debate crops up, and something that I've been thinking about quite a bit in relation to this, you have a lot of people who come on and share very emotive, very deeply personal.
Very personal stories, yeah.
And I don't know how you would feel or your callers would feel if your script and responses were drafted by ChatGPT.
I'd feel duped.
Yeah. And in the context of politics, for example, say if a minister is making a speech reflecting the impact of the housing crisis or the cost of living crisis, and they're trying to be deeply emotive, but again, you found out that it was written by ChatGPT, would you care? And it's these weirdly human scenarios.
Well, for instance, right? Like for instance, and just to be very clear, we're talking about this. This is purely an example to mention. But there's going to be a state apology tomorrow with relation to Stardust.
Yeah.
And I was listening to one of the victims' families on breakfast this morning about what they might like from that apology, like what content they would want included in that.
Mm.
Can you imagine if it ever... I'm not to say if anybody's just tuning in that in any way anybody from the government department or Taoiseach's office is going to ChatGPT that.
Mm.
But I think people would be... You know what I mean? In an instance like that, I think people would be disappointed in the event they thought or heard that, you know, the apology or the script
was produced by AI.
Yeah.
I think we are seeing instances of this discomfort. Now, nothing on that scale. But for example, there are an awful lot of companies that are now using it to draft emails. So I know of an instance of a HR company in the US that used ChatGPT to draft emails to tell people that they were being let go.
Wow.
And it's...
So after years of service, the best we can give you for all of your hard work, commitment, dedication and loyalty to our company is that we can't actually be arsed writing an email to tell you you're going to be fired ourselves, so we're going to get ChatGPT to
and do copy it. And paste it. Yeah. And I think it's that thing of embracing the technology but not losing the humanity and the empathy. And I think it's such a seesaw and it's a very difficult one to balance. But my key point here would be that this is absolutely a useful tool. And it's not just ChatGPT. There's Google's Gemini, and then on Friday of last week, Meta unveiled their version as well, which is called Llama 3. I don't know why they all have such dreadful names, but there's a whole different one. So that's the instance of, say, writing your script or writing speeches or whatever. But say you're hosting a table quiz. I know you're fond of a little social gathering. If you wanted to do a table quiz or a bit of crack on a Friday night,
yeah, you might.
But you didn't want to make up 10 rounds of 10 questions.
Or you don't have an hour to do it.
Exactly. That's when this is the dream. Mm. And it's so handy. Or, you know, if you're like me and you're moving house at the moment, you can ask it to draft up the best plan and the order to pack things. So it told me the order to pack up my kitchen.
You didn't use that list I gave you.
I just wanted to double check and verify. To be fair, you weren't far wrong on ChatGPT.
Yeah, telling you. But see, there's the experience.
Always trust the robots. But so again, I am very, very fond of using this technology, but I just think you need to have the cop on to do it.
Yeah.
The other thing that really annoys me
about it. You need to be smarter than the tech.
You do. The other thing that really annoys me about it is I know quite a few people who would use it on, say, LinkedIn posts or social media posts. and everything is awesome all the time. And
they're a bit American.
Oh, it's so American. Yeah. Nobody is that happy all the time. Like, nobody is that happy. And so it's just ensuring that you don't lose your identity and your own turns of phrase. But if you are looking for a PA, but you don't have the money or the notions to have a PA, I would absolutely tap into it.
It's your friend. We're going to be talking about this all this week here on Lunchtime Live, the impact of AI in our daily lives, how it can benefit us, the safeguards that we need. We're actually going to be talking about AI in the music industry tomorrow.
Yeah.
Which I think will be interesting.
It's such an interesting one. And we're seeing more and more artists becoming vocal, expressing their concerns about it. Mm. You know, last year there was an Oasis album created by AI. It had nothing to do with either of the Gallagher brothers or any member of Oasis, but it sounded exactly like an Oasis album. And so if you were an artist who spent years building your craft and refining it, it's scary.
Yeah. Well, actually, you know, those in the music industry, if you want to join us or get in touch with us about this tomorrow, the email's lunchtimelive@newstalk.com. We're going to be talking about the truth, the accuracy, the law around it on Wednesday. We're looking at its impact in your workplace and the work environment on Thursday. And really interesting, we're talking about AI and art on Friday.
This is a huge one. When I was in America last week with Kieran Cuddy on the Hard Shoulder, as I said, we were talking about Meta's AI, and Kieran put in to the Meta AI, create an image of an Irish radio presenter, and it was a man wearing headphones who'd had the bejesus beaten out of him because he was drunk.
Really?
Yeah. So, like, it can create these incredible images, but it's force-fed all of these stereotypes. So, look, I can't wait to hear all the different discussions because it's such a huge area.
Well, as Jess says, we're not using AI here at Lunchtime Live. I want your own personal stories and your life experience on the programme. It's 087 1400 106 if you want to drop me a voice note or a WhatsApp. Jess Kelly, News Talks tech correspondent, as always. Thanks a million for joining us here on the show.
Thank you.
We marveled at our own magnificence as we gave birth to AI.
Open the pod bay doors, Hal.
I'm afraid I can't do that.
It's alive! It's alive!
AI on Lunchtime Live.
Yeah, if you're listening to the programme yesterday, you will know that this week is AI week here on the show. And each day at this time, we are going to deep dive into the world of artificial intelligence. We just want to kind of explore how AI is and will shape our lives, whether it's from the app on your phone to the way we work or interact with people across the globe. Jess Kelly, our tech correspondent, was with us yesterday talking about the pros and cons of AI and even how we already use it throughout our daily lives. You know, when you pick up your phone or your iPhone, and of course the facial recognition allows you to open it. I mean, we're all using Google Maps at this stage for years. So it's here, but we want to see how we can best use it and what are the concerns. So I suppose really one of the most striking examples of the capabilities of artificial intelligence can be found in the music sector. So whether you want to hear pop stars covering songs like Britney Spears here singing Michael Jackson, sounds odd though, doesn't it? Yeah. Or maybe it's even like, you know, deceased star like Queen's Freddie Mercury, you know, come back from the dead to sing Celine Dion. We're talking today about the impact of AI on the music industry. And joining us today is the CEO of First Music Contact, Angela Dorgan, because they're involved in the development and resource organisation of the music sector in Ireland. And also to Adam O'Regan, who's a guitarist with Soda Blonde. Good afternoon to you both.
Hello. Hello.
Thanks for joining us. You know, Angela, just like the Britney and the Freddie Mercury covers and the clips, it is remarkable, I suppose, first of all, you know, when you hear what AI can do.
Yeah, They're awful though.
Yeah.
You the Mercury
one, it's not as bad. The Britney one now is...
I would be the opposite. I think
really?
That just the opposite, sounds like Celine with a cold.
Yeah.
I think it's I suppose Adam and I were talking outside, and it's really the difference between AI and wonderful artists is that there's a human.
Yeah.
And I think you can hear that. I suppose the challenge is... You know, there are tons of challenges for us. There are tons of positives and negatives about AI. And I suppose, you know, as in relation to your clip, the bay doors are already opened, Hal. You know, AI has been around for a while. That's how we get our algorithms. That's how Meta and X and everybody else can market to us. Those are all instruments of AI. From our point of view, and our job is to help artists develop careers, it's about the threat of AI to existing and future careers of Irish and global artists, and it's about the danger of the space in the market that AI generated music will take up that, you know, should be for artists making a living. It's also about once again, the music industry dropping the ball when it comes to protecting artists in this realm as well.
Okay,
you know, so from our point of view, there are pluses, and Adam can talk to this as an artist himself just about the pluses for artists.
Yeah, so like as somebody who's a performer and involved in the industry, just first of all, I suppose, Adam, what do you see as the pros of AI, and where do we see it first of all?
Well, it's obviously this massive, massive, super powerful technology, you know, and, you know, like since the beginning of recorded music, almost every decade, there's been some new technological innovation. And as a creative, I suppose, you know, I'm always looking for a new way to kind of help the art that I'm making. And so, you know, there's been certainly ways where one thing I like to do is if I've written some lyrics, it's interesting to go feed the lyrics into the thing and say, analyze these lyrics, and you can see pretty clearly whether the point that you're trying to get across is airtight enough or is being conveyed in the right way. Small specific example of, you know, one way that can be helpful. But generally I'd like, maybe I'm being overtly optimistic, but I'm hesitant to believe that there's an appetite for any, I mean, and that's a bit of a gimmick listening to Freddie Mercury singing that song, but I can't really see how that would really, people really want to hear that properly.
Well, just on that, actually, you know, some of the Oasis-esque songs, there's an interesting one, actually, in with Liam Gallagher type, and it was the UK indie band Breezer that did it last year. Just take a listen to this.
Does it sound like Oasis?
I mean, that's, I don't know. I think it's, and this is where I agree with Adam, in the area of, I don't think lots of us are fooled, as audiences are fooled by what's generated. I think Breezer probably did that for a gimmick, and, you know.
We're talking about it.
Yeah. But also, I suppose a lot of British bands want Oasis to stop quarrelling and come back. So I think they're poking the bear in any way they can. I think Adam's point is a good one. And I think we see artists using AI for so many things that it does. Mm. It does save hours and hours in your creative day. So, you know, you can ask it, use AI to write a press release. You can use AI, say, if you're doing a tour in the States, and you can say, generate a list of Seattle talk, you know, music radio, indie radio for me. And, you know, it does all of those really hard to do tasks, and also the tasks that would have in the old industry been someone with a black book and you'd have to like be signed to them or something to access those people.
Okay.
So there is a huge democratization. Where my fear comes in is how much AI music is clogging up the portals that artists, that real artists use to generate income. So AI being played on radio means an Irish act doesn't get played on radio. AI being on Spotify playlists drops emerging artists in that key stage out of it. So that's where I feel like the industry are maybe letting, and there's something concrete. So a Spotify or a Deezer could, you know, if they say they're for artists, could say, we're going to stop playlisting AI generated music, or we're going to free up some space on our listenership.
What are you concerned about, Adam?
Well, it's really two conversations, I think, because there's, you know, myself and my brothers are have this debate kind of in our messenger group chat quite often about, you know, the ramifications of AI in general. And I think AI, we can all recognize there's a potential negative outcome and there's positive outcomes. But I think it's when it comes to the realm of like of emulating human voice or taking the place of creativity on whole. There was there's obviously this these song generators that have just kind of been released in the last kind of couple of weeks, and I was playing with one the other day just to see the capabilities of it. And you type in essentially a verse of lyrics, or you can just type in write me a song about I have a friend Tom, he owns a diamonds shop, jeweler in Paris Court. I said write a song about my friend Tom who's a jeweler, he's always looking for love or whatever, and write it in the style of 80s power pop. And it gave me three examples in about a minute, and they were really good.
Really?
They were good insofar as you might expect it to be very rudimentary, very basic ABC type of music, but they were very interesting. It wrote the lyrics, it wrote the musical arrangement, it recorded it essentially as a human voice. Mm. The song was called Diamonds in the Rough. And what's terrifying about that is like, okay, it's actually good. And, you know, you can't see a world where people are lazy. They want a shortcut to, you know, to create.
We're all busy.
And, yeah. And especially at the top of the industry when all they really care about is the commerce of it, the money, you know, and they don't put the value of the art first. You know, you can't, it's hard to unsee a world where that will dominate in some shape or form, you know.
Ruth Ann is a Grammy nominated singer, songwriter and producer. Ruth Ann is with us here too on the line, Angela and Adam. Are you working with an AI company at the moment, Ruth Ann? Have I that right?
I'm working on it with an AI company as far as ethical AI, which is trying to make sure that the singers behind these vocal packs you can get are actually getting paid and compensated. So it's more about trying to find ethical ways for AI to be used, because it is being used. I've gone to sessions plenty of times where, you know, in 2 seconds they can change my voice to sound like anyone, they can change me to sound like a man, and they're very, very well, I mean, it sounds like a real person. And so the main thing is protecting, how do we protect singers? How do we protect people from being able to make and make sure that we can all make revenue from these AI companies, because the robots are going to be trained using voices, real songs. So there's a copyright issue as well of how these robots are being trained. And that's really important for everybody to know, is that there is going to be copyright issues with AI. And that's something that is already being discussed and looked into right now.
So how do you get the balance on that right then?
And it's going to be hard to, because as we see with streaming, when streaming first came in, it was kind of a free-for-all. And in some ways, it still is a free-for-all, and there's certain legislations and certain things you can do. But there is going to be an element of, there's always going to be some sites that, you know, people are going to be able to use. But I think it's about getting on top of it and not being behind it. That's why I'm working with this company, to try and make something ethical where singers are actually making money from it. And I think it's about accepting that it is coming in, but it's how we handle it and what parameters and boundaries and legislations we put in place to protect real human beings from what they're doing. But I will say as well, like a lot of the people I talk to in the industry, there's a lack of soul in AI and personality. You can never replace the feeling of a live band. You can never replace the feeling of soul and emotion. So there is going to be always a certain limit that it can take us to. But people are still going to always want that live soul, you know, from humans. And I don't think AI will ever be able to replace what a live singer can do on stage to you. You know what I mean? Versus an AI robot. And I believe that the soul will never be able to be replaced by a robot.
Yeah, you see, the covering artist is sort of, you know, like through AI is one thing. But where it's sort of creating original music or original lyrics is a totally different thing though, isn't it?
Well, I think,
Ruthie,
I think you bring up the right point insofar as what's at jeopardy really more than anything else is soul, you know, and I think that, I kind of think that the human voice, and myself and Angela were talking about this briefly beforehand, is the one thing, I think, you know, as a way forward at all this, the human voice is almost something that should be off the table in terms of being replicated by AI. I think there should be one unanimous voice. It should be the voice of HAL 9000 from 2001 A Space Odyssey. And that should be the voice of AI. And there should, I think, I can't see why replicate anyone else's voice. I just don't understand what the purpose of it.
The purpose of it a lot of the time is to when you're writing music, you might be in a room where there's no singer. And a lot of the time, I know from just sessions that I've been in, if a singer isn't there, like I'm not there and a producer can't sing, the reason why they're replicating, why they need them voices is because sometimes to sell the song, to get the song across to a Rihanna, Beyonce, they need to make it sound that good. So a lot of the time, real human singers, like demo singing used to be
just
a job,
like
right?
Vocals,
so you'd get paid.
Yeah,
so you'd get paid, right? But now a lot of the time I'm in the session, I don't get paid to do the demo, but I have to sell the song. So my voice has to sell it to the artist listening and going, or the DJ going, oh my God, I want that song. And where AI vocals are being used right now is in a lot of the demo process. It's the demo.
Is there another job, is it?
To the artist. Yeah, it isn't. I mean, and I do it for free. A lot of the time songwriters do these demos now for free. But back in the day, there was singers paid. So we've already lost a job from back in the day. That job is gone. Like Katy Perry started her career being a session singer and session musicians. And that's the first danger of AI, and it's already happening, is that you won't need to bring in a guitarist. You won't need to bring in a singer because AI will be able to do all that for you. But it's very difficult to stop that from happening. That's already massively happening.
Just finally, do you feel we'll see something similar to the writer's strike on this, Angela, you know, in the US? Or will, like, is that the next level? Is that where it goes to?
I'm not sure. I think Ruthann makes a great couple of points there. And one of them, I suppose, is protecting the artist and protecting the songwriter. And she is right. There are plenty more tools that AI can give an artist for their toolbox, but it's about how to protect the artist and the jobs in existence. I suppose one of the things, what AI does is if you ask it to do something, it sweeps the internet for that thing. Mm. So I think the industry missed a jump about 7 years ago.
Trying to catch up.
Well, yes, but I think the solution was maybe there about 7 or 8 years ago, blockchain. So that if collection societies and stuff had switched over to blockchain back then, it would be far easier to, you know, pick the piece of music that the AI generated to create a song and give it to the original songwriter and give them their then...
We actually have a song. A listener has sent it into us, John, here on WhatsApp and voice note, and we might actually talk about this again a little bit later in the show. But for the moment, Angela Dorgan, who's the CEO of First Music Contact, Adam O'Regan, guitarist with Soda Blonde, and musician Ruthann, thank you all very much for joining us here on the program today.
AI on Lunchtime Live.
Now, just before the news at 1 today, we were talking about the impact of AI on the music industry. And actually, one of our listeners, John, got in touch posting as J-Man on SoundCloud. He said that he used Udio, which is an online AI music generator, to create this song and lyrics.
Day by day, the grind keeps wearing thin. Voices straining, tunes we can't begin.
We just can't win.
Life's a song we played a touch too long. Now the chords are all going wrong. 'Cause we're feeling that burden now stirring.
It's not bad. Yeah, not bad at all. Actually, you can nearly hear yourself singing along. That's J-Man on SoundCloud. A message in from John today. Do keep them coming into us on WhatsApp.
We marveled at our own magnificence as we gave birth to AI.
Open the pod bay doors, Hal.
I'm afraid I can't do that.
It's alive! It's alive!
AI on Lunchtime Live.
Welcome back to Lunchtime Live. It is Andrea Gilligan here with you until 2 o'clock. This week, as you know, we are focusing on AI and what it means for each and every one of us. Already this week, Jess Kelly has given me some examples of what exactly AI is currently capable of. We have looked at the effect that AI has had and will continue to have on the music industry. But today on the show, we are focusing on AI, the law and the truth. And joining me in studio today are Brian McKelligott, partner with Irish business law firm Mason, Hayes and Curran, and and our very own news anchor here on News Talk, Eamon Torsney. Today we are asking, what are the legal implications of artificial intelligence and how can you tell what is real and what is fake in this new digital world? To start, for example, how many of you actually believe that this voice is me? Andrea, were you convinced?
Wow. Oh my God, yeah. I don't know whether to be alarmed that there's parts of that that actually does kind of resemble me, or maybe I should be somewhat relieved that I can hang on to the job for another year or two, because surely that doesn't sound like me. Eamon Torsney, you know me long enough at this stage.
I think, let's be honest now, I was kind of aware that this might happen, so therefore I was listening for the flaws, if you like. So, but hopefully they don't find any for a newsreader as well. You know, we have to put a break in it there. But it was frightening though as well in certain
aspects,
wasn't it?
There's certain parts, isn't there?
Yeah,
so Eamon Torsney, of course, our own news anchor here with News Talk, and Brian McGallagher, as I just said there in my cloned clip, who's a partner with Mason Hayes and Kearns law firm, both with me today. It's not perfect, but it's not bad, Brian, either, is it?
It's pretty impressive, isn't it? And you see so many examples, and it's become such a big topic this year in the year of elections, isn't it? Both here in the EU and in the US. There's a massive focus on, you know, what can you rely on, and a lot of disinformation.
I suppose the bit, you know, just in listening to that clip, and this is something we've been talking about with Jess Kelly on Monday, and we were talking about the impact of artificial intelligence in the music industry yesterday. And one of the things that, that you know, the artist and those working in the industry will tell me is that AI lacks soul. Mm. And I would like to think that that cloned clip of me, it lacks the injection probably of personality, I hope.
Emotion, personality, you know, that's the thing, is that there are actually news channels that are set up with AI generated content, and all of them, though, require the content to have human verification behind it. So even if it's a text-based, say, web page one, they employ editors, they employ, you know, other journalists to make sure that the information that eventually goes out actually is truthful, if you like, and is representative. But also then the AI-generated news readers that I have heard. Mm. And again, there's no empathy, there's no emotion behind it that you would get with journalism.
Robotic.
Yeah, robotic. Exactly.
Just on the voice cloning act, actually, yes, that was my voice cloned by one of our researchers here in the team. Like, before people kick off, he did ask for my permission, obviously. But like, we didn't actually need anything else. You know, that's just as simple as basically putting that text into software, into an app. And that is just a lot of the audio was taken from many of our podcasts that are online that you guys listen back to on the News Talk app. But it's pretty simple to do it. You know, it uploads in around a minute. He told me as well he used a fake email address, signed a disclosure with a fake name, was able to complete the whole thing in about 5 minutes. It was free to do it. And this is coming from a researcher on the team, you know, who would tell me himself that he's not great at using technology, but it's easy and it's accessible. So I suppose, where are the concerns, Brian, in the area that you're working in, you know, in the legal perspective of all of this? Like, you know, we are currently, I suppose, drawing up or legislating around this, aren't we?
Absolutely. You know what? It actually breaks down into two buckets. One is the kind of the responsible ethical side of things, and the other is the law. And in about, say, 8 weeks' time, we're going to get a new piece of European legislation, which is going to legislate for many applications of AI. But deepfakes will come into it, but the law, I guess, will be difficult to enforce, in my opinion anyway, in that it's going to put the onus on the user of the AI system, which is the deepfake system that generated the particular voice clone for you there, to not do it, or to make it, to make a disclaimer about it being a deepfake. Now, if you think about that, though, in a practical sense, how is that actually going to stop, you know, rogue actors just issuing these left, right and centre? So a lot of it will come back to how organisations, from an ethical or safe sort of AI perspective, set up their systems so as to ensure maybe some sort of a verification that, you know, are you the person who is, you know, or do you have consent to do this in the first place? So there's a big gap there between what the law says and what maybe people might like to see from an ethical perspective.
Yeah, well, there was actually very little sought for or looked for, you know, in the cloning of that clip.
And I think a lot of that will come down to, in time, a distinction between, you know, who are the providers you'll trust, and who are the providers you may not trust, and the, you know, the kind of sort of rogue providers that you'll stay away from, or that many of us will stay away from.
This is an election year, and in the US too, like, there's been lots of talk about how AI might interfere with the election. For example, in case you didn't hear, are coming up on the show on Monday.
Stay tuned to Lunchtime Live. After the break, Andrea Gilligan will be talking AI with Jess Kelly.
Yeah, and of course, let's not forget.
This is Joe Biden. It seems you can also easily fake my voice as well.
Don't forget me, you guys. I was president too, you know, Barack Obama.
It's, you know, election era and year here, Eamon Torresney, like you're in the newsroom, you're listening and dealing with this. So, yeah.
Well, the whole thing here is that there's always been technological advances that journalism has had to deal with. And we've relied on basic journalism skills to get us through that. And I think we're going to have to, you know, instead of being afraid of AI as it comes along, just trust our skills to be able to actually identify and verify, as you were mentioning there earlier, verifying what is the source of this information. And then using common sense, Andrea, like the idea that, you know, Donald Trump's going to do an advert, you know, for Lunchtime Live and introduce the program every day. You know, look, common sense will tell us this is wrong. So we have to trust our instincts as well that actually, look, there's something wrong here with this clip. You know, for example, a politician, there might be an edited video of a politician saying something outrageous. And we know from experience that, well, that's not that the viewpoint that that politician would hold. Therefore, it's very unlikely that that politician would say this. So let's make sure what the source is. Now, unless the politician has had a Fugere and decided that he's going to make some crazy statement. So, you know, we can't be afraid of it as journalists because we have to say, you know, we will be able to cover these elections and trust our own judgment as well that we can spot these fakes. We're also just like, you know, you did give me the heads up about the intro there. So I was kind of like, we're naturally skeptical as well. So that's another instinct as well that will help us get us through this this kind of challenge that we're going to face.
There is already the steps being taken then by newsrooms to be that bit extra vigilant then.
Yes, of course. We all are as well. And then the other interesting thing about newsrooms, and that we don't do it in terms of generating scripts by AI. I mean, we just haven't gone down that. But other newsrooms, other organisations are. And then there's a whole legal aspect to that in terms of, you know, copyright and, you know, who actually wrote those stories. Initially anyway. So I think we will be, there's also the kind of, when the videos appear, there's also the kind of the crowdsourcing that will also kind of say, this is fake, and there's reputable, you know, fact checkers and all the rest that are available. So yes, with every challenge that AI comes up with, there's a whole team of people that are going to be able to kind of prove and work on and to make sure that actually what we're seeing is the truth and that it's a factual. Remember, and also just to say that before AI and everything, you know, people could manipulate videos.
Yeah.
You know,
but we always had editing. Yeah. You know, sure, you and I are editing for 20 years at this stage on software systems, you know.
And therefore, you know, what way you do a clip could actually, you know, determine, you know, the tone we had Simon Harris saying that one of his comments at an event recently were taken out of context because everyone focused on one particular aspect, the Berlin and Paris comment. Mm. So, you know, again, as I say, so the challenges have always been there. I just don't want to get overwhelmed by the thought that kind of, oh, we won't be able to deal with it. I think we have to be confident that, yes, we can deal with the challenge that AI poses.
Yeah, and isn't that also the point that we're in a period of tremendous transition at the moment where we're trying to grapple with this technology, which to all intents and purposes only landed 18 months ago. And what you're trying to do is understand the context of using the technology. Now, you will have the legal side will come in and try to put some frameworks around what, you know, the do's and the don'ts. But, you know, even within, let's say, the AI Act, there's a derogation for, let's say, the use of these deepfakes that says, you know, it's okay if they're kind of evidently sort of, you know, comedic in nature or some form of sarcasm or, you know, for that sort of a purpose. Mm. So, you know, there's probably going to be a period in the next couple of years where we're going to try to work our way through what we can deal with, what's reasonable, and what will just be shaken off immediately as the sort of rubbish.
So there's data protection concerns.
Oh, absolutely.
And there's copyright, as Eamon said, copyright issues.
Yeah. And also as well, I think to be upfront when you're using it, because it's interesting. A few weeks ago, one of the national newspapers had an opinion poll. And it described how it did the survey, and it was by text. And it said, this is how it said, because you're supposed to be open as well, remember, in how you do a survey, how many people you survey. And it said, we used OpenAI, ChatGPT, to summarize the findings.
Yeah.
And I thought, that was the first time I had encountered that in an Irish newspaper. And it struck me as, I don't know whether I'm reassured or not reassured, but at least I know.
Yeah.
And I think that's crucial.
That is part of what the law will say, is that you have to have a transparency aspect to it. So if you're interacting with a piece of technology that's not absolutely apparent,
Are we in a, you know, where do you, like, you're a specialist now, you know, as a solicitor in a legal firm in AI and artificial intelligence. So are, how much have we as the Irish state and government caught up with where AI is at the moment, or are we very far behind?
I know, I don't think we're very far behind, let's say, when it comes to the policy side of things. When it comes to, I guess, investment, that's a different story. But I think that's more of a European versus US type thing, where the US is clearly streets ahead of us when it comes to generating this tech. All of that big tech comes out of the US, not Europe.
Partner with Mason Hayes and Kearns, Brian McGallagher, and of course news anchor with News Talk, Eamon Torresney. Thanks a million to you both for joining us here on the programme today. Listener says, that clone of Andrea totally caught me. It did sound like her, but it was zero crack. Thanks a million for that. We'll take that. Absolutely delighted with that message.
We marvelled at our own magnificence as we gave birth to AI.
Open the pod bay doors, Hal.
I'm afraid I can't do that.
It's alive! It's alive!
AI on Lunchtime Live.
Welcome back to Lunchtime Live with your host, Andrea Gilligan. We're now on the fourth day of our AI week, and the conversation has been nothing short of enlightening. Today, we're diving deeper into the impact of artificial intelligence on the workplace, from the rise of automation to the role of machine learning in shaping our professional landscape. We'll be exploring the transformative changes that AI is bringing to the world of work. So, whether you're an employee adapting to new technologies or an employer navigating this digital frontier, we've got insights and perspectives to share. So grab your lunch and join us for another engaging discussion on Lunchtime Live. And that introduction, of course, comes courtesy of ChatGPT, because I would never write anything or read anything or say anything remotely near or close to that. But it is an example of just how artificial intelligence can make my working life that little bit easier. We're talking today about AI and work on the programme. And I'm joined by Mark Kelly, who's the founder of AI Ireland, and Tracy Keevans, who's the director with Morgan McKinley Recruitment Agency. Good afternoon to you both.
Hi,
Mark, is it coming for our jobs?
Potentially. Every job will be, you know, changed to some degree in the coming months and years. Depending on your job, it will potentially take it away. It may augment it in some ways, but change is happening straight away.
Mm. By the sounds of it, I just did that today by way of ChatGPT and try and get a feel for where it's at. It's robotic. I'd say that's boring for listeners listening to that long read, but it's there or thereabouts.
So it's basic, but you can tweak it to make it more personalised based on how you talk, how you learn, and that can be done in seconds. So what you used there was the basic ChatGPT version, but you can get add-ons which can talk like you, engage like you. All you have to do is put in text that you've written before that it can learn from. Mm. So this is where companies can customize it depending on their brand tone, how they can actually create a culture internally where companies are using it. But then some people don't use it. So there's a little bit of a difference between who uses and don't use it. Mm. But what we do know is that 30% of employees are shadow ChatGPT users, where they're using it, but not necessarily telling their employer they're using it.
Why not?
They don't want to get the miss out on the credit. So these people are between 12 to 25% more productive using these tools than their employees sitting beside them.
So they're just not telling the manager.
Exactly, because that's an extra...
Shadow users, I love it. That's like, the 30% of you out there.
Think about it, that's an extra 6 to 8 hours they've got to be more productive than people that aren't using it.
Is it on the mind much of employers at the moment, Tracy, like when they're coming to you guys and they're looking, you know, to recruit in whatever field? How big of a, you know, how top of the agenda is AI?
It's very much top of mind with employers. I mean, we've seen that the financial services companies, manufacturing companies were the earlier adopters of AI skills. But just something you made a point earlier about writing your speech. Mm-hmm. We've actually seen that in that candidates are using it to write their CVs. And the reality is, we had an employer come to us recently who said, we want to use you to do a more deep screening process, because our belief is the CVs we're receiving don't reflect the people we're meeting, that were really well written, well crafted, but the reality, when they actually spoke to them, they weren't able to speak to any of the experience.
So Andrea's, puts all her data, information, qualifications, skills into ChatGPT. This lovely CV comes out. I get called for interview. I mean, on paper, I'm a wonderful candidate. I sit in front of you, open my mouth, and just doesn't fit.
Well, the ability to speak to what's actually in your CV was missing. And so there then was a question mark. Were these genuine work experiences that were being reflected or not? So there's definitely more work on the behalf of a recruiter today to actually really identify if the experience is real or not real.
Is that the challenge for the recruiter or the employer?
Well, both, and the recruiter acting on behalf of an employer or the employer themselves if they're looking to hire people directly.
Yeah. Okay. The level of advancement, I suppose, that we've had in AI in the workplace and employment, Mark, in the past year or so, how soon, like, because it is a frightening prospect for people, we were talking about it in music the other day, and we're going to be chatting about AI in the arts as well tomorrow as an industry that, really has been impacted, I suppose, at the forefront of this, in particular the music sector. But really, like, are there any jobs that will escape this?
Well, just to put in perspective, last year, $24 billion was invested into generative AI. So companies are going all in on this. So the challenge you have is expectations have really increased now. So if you're sitting at home, you're watching Netflix, you've got a personalized recommendation engine offering you really good content, you're using an Uber, you're making purchases on Amazon. So when you're coming into the workplace, you want to have that still, that digital experience where you can engage. So there's pressure now to be more productive with tools that people want to use, but also your customers want to have that digital experience. So if you're a company and you're not offering that, you're lagging behind. So this is where every role is changing or being reimagined at this point.
Listen, I want to hear from people today about whether or not you're currently using AI in your workplace at the moment. Take a listen. Our reporter, Emily Keegan, was out and about in the streets asking people, do you currently use AI at work?
Yeah, every day.
Yeah, I do. I use it kind of just get a base drop of like what to start out, kind of get your template and then work from there.
It is available, but we don't personally use it. So I work in recruitment, so there's certain ways we can use it, but we would never use it in a way that would, it could have any bias against candidates.
I think it's the same as radio, TV, computers, internet. Like, we were all afraid of it at the start. Like, I'm sure this is what this feels like, but yeah, it's 2024, so yeah.
Interesting point there, Tracy, from just one of the people in that clip talking to Emily about the idea of bias, and that sort of conscious bias you might have when looking at employees.
I think that AI, and particularly the large language models like ChatGPT or Gemini, they can inherit biases on a scale that can be amplified if they're used with large data sets. So it can produce gender biases and racial biases, and it's been proven that has been the case in certain instances. So it is something that needs to be used with in augmented, as Mark said, and not as a replacement of human decision or intervention at
so
this
it's,
point.
It's, do you see it as a kind of a complement to the recruitment world?
Where we are right now, yes. I think it is very much in parallel. It can aid faster decision making. It can aid using a lot more bigger data sets to make informed decisions. And I think that's important. But I don't think it's getting the decision to the human to make that decision quicker.
We may start, to see a lot more, I think, of AI in the workplace. But I just want to get a sense today whether or not people are actually worried that it is going to take their job in the not too distant future.
The job I'm in at the moment, not really, but like I can see why others are.
No, absolutely not. No, like it only like creates a baseline for creativity to really like spawn.
I think there's always going to be a level of discretion required, so you're always going to require a level of human interaction in terms of what you do. I think it'll have a role, but like anything else, everything has its place.
For the role I'm in, no. I can see how that would be the case for other industries potentially.
Yeah, can you look at it, I suppose, Mark, from the, it's a way to just improve efficiency in the workplace. Like, is that where employers are going to see the pros of this?
They are. So we know there's certain areas that it works really well. So customer service, for example, we've got a, you know, HR onboarding, offboarding of employees, and sales and marketing. So content creation is just incredibly good. But like, we have now autonomous vehicles driving around, you know, San Francisco, Austin, Texas, Los Angeles, that are safer than regular drivers. 3 million miles have been done and they're a safer bet to go down. So this isn't just coming in the future. This is happening now.
It's here.
It's here now.
So it's just get on board with it, really, is it?
Well, this is what I say to people. AI is not going to take your job, but the person sitting beside you who's using AI will.
The person who's using it beside you in the office will.
Will.
Yeah, because they're more efficient.
Exactly. And they're going to get promoted and you're not. And you're going to be left behind. And that's a reality.
Is that your message on this as well, Tracy?
Absolutely agree with it. I think there was a big study done, an OECD study that said, and it was done across 7 countries, 2,000 employees, and they said that 3 in 5 workers were worried about losing their job in the next 10 years. But what was interesting was it was those that were working with AI that were more worried about it than those that weren't. And there's also this concept of, as AI progresses, will it impact on wages and salaries? And will it be a case if somebody is doing more or less than they were doing before? Is that going to impact on salary? But right now,
how do you see? What's your take on that?
As it is now, I think because I suppose there's efficiency has been created and because people are getting more enjoyment, and those that are working with it, it's been taking out more repetitive tasks and admin tasks of their role. They feel like they're doing more value add and engagement. So they see it as absolutely something that they can work with to develop it. It's very difficult to see where it's going to go. I mean, Mark made a very good point there about some of the jobs like taxi drivers replacing in full. But I think what we're seeing right now in the marketplace, and we've been doing salary surveys for the last 30 years, and certainly what we would have done 30 years ago is unrecognisable for now in terms of the job titles. And we have seen huge creation of new jobs as a result of AI. So actually, I think the world of work is going to look very differently. The type of jobs we're doing, they're going to be different to what they were before, as opposed to there's going to be no employment or we're all going to be earning significantly less.
So go into your employer today if you're one of the 30%, as Mark said, who's currently using AI and say, listen, I'm using ChatGPT. I can get my briefs done a lot quicker. Therefore, I have more free time. I'm more efficient. So I should be getting a pay raise.
Absolutely.
As simple as that.
See, the bar raises now. And with that bar, more efficiency comes and expectations come. So if you want to get a promotion, you go to your employer and say, here's opportunities to automate different tasks where you can become more productive. And I give that person 12 months and they'll have a pay rise and promotion, because ultimately customers want a better experience and companies need to deliver that.
Yeah, but it's funny the amount of times we've conversations in the show, Mark, you know, about customer service, and people just often want to talk to somebody, 100%. Not a robot, at the end of the phone.
Absolutely. And I'd be the first person to say that. But the challenge is now is that the expectations have gone up and people's resistance. But companies like Klarna are using AI to replace 700 people, increase customer service net promoter score to like 60 to 97%. So when done well, it's an incredible experience.
It's really interesting just to get a sense of where it's currently at in the workplace. That's Mark Kelly, founder of AI Ireland and director with Morgan McKinley Recruitment Agency. Tracy Keevans, thanks a million to you both for joining us here. We are going to be talking about AI and the arts on Lunchtime Live tomorrow afternoon.
We marveled at our own magnificence as we gave birth to AI.
Open the pod bay doors, Hal.
I'm afraid I can't do that.
It's alive! It's alive!
AI on Lunchtime Live.
Yeah, we've been talking about the capabilities of artificial intelligence all this week on the show, from its impact on the music world. We've been talking about how it's changing salaries in the workplace and the work environment. But today we want to talk about AI and the arts and technology. So Caoimhe Lavelle, who's a Dublin artist, poet and cartoonist, is with me, along with the director and founder of the Beta Festival, Aisling Murray. Good afternoon to you both.
Good afternoon.
In the spirit, I suppose, of the arts and technology, and considering yesterday was Poetry Day, AI has penned us a short poem by way of an introduction. I can't take any credit for this, but you can tell me how good it is. In the realms of art and verse, you'll find Caoimhe Lavelle, both bright and kind, a cartoonist's touch, a poet's grace. She paints the world in a vibrant space. With Aisling Murray by her side, Beta's Festival's heart and guide, Andrea Gilligan leads the way in Lunchtime Live, where stories play. I can take no credit for that, actually. But what is the impact of AI in the arts at the moment?
Yeah, it's a good question. I suppose one way to look at it is that artificial intelligence is a new tool for creativity. And artists have always, they have a long-standing tradition of embracing new tools and new technologies, everything from photography and film. And so I think, you know, one way to think about it is the way in which artists can co-create using artificial intelligence. There are certainly things to be cautious about and the way that data is collected and trained to create these AI models. But there are ways to be playful with it as well. Actually, last year in Beta Festival, an artist called Joanna Walsh had a piece called Miscommunication, where she trained, based on the letters of Countess Markovitch, an AI version of Countess Markovitch, wow, so that you could actually talk to Countess Markovitch. So there are kind of playful ways that you can look at doing this. You know?
Do you know, but the thing is, we're all kind of using it really at the moment, Aisling, because sure, we all have filters in our phone.
Exactly. Yeah. Like, yeah. Auto text.
Don't get me wrong. There are times I love a good filter the odd day.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, look, the spam folder in your email, like, it's AI has been around us for years. It's just, I suppose, the generative AI is kind of pushing it forward and become much more dominant in the past year with things like DALL-E and ChatGPT.
Where does it overstep, Caoimhe, though? Like, is somebody, you know, you are a poet. So, I mean, you know, do you listen to that quick poem we got AI to put together and go, my job is safe, or...
Yeah, in a way. And I think, like, as a poet and a cartoonist and artist as well, or like a visual and verbal communicator, yeah, I do feel like it's never going to recreate something with soul and with, like, intention. You can probably have fun with it. I'm probably a bit more traditionalist or like a bit of a romantic kind of hand draw everything. But also, like, I don't know, I think it's a gratification loop that actually takes you away from practice. And I think most art actually happens, like, in practice, in making mistakes or happy accidents or kind of handling materials. I do think that people are almost robbing themselves of the opportunity to write a poem or to draw a picture or things that I think everyone has the ability to do.
Yeah, but when you think of, like, you know, just when we marry this with the discussion we had yesterday about how AI is impacting the work environment, like, you can nearly see how some employers would start to look at, like, say, areas around graphic design. You know?
Yeah, although, like, I have seen reports online as well of art directors anonymously kind of reporting that, you know, prompters have already been hired into their pipeline and they're having a huge struggle because of how time consuming it is, because they can't really, as prompters, take on feedback and change just very specific things because they don't really know how to kind of get in and alter the image themselves. Okay. So apparently, like, it's in kind of the art direction department anyway, is maybe currently causing more problems.
Do you know, we were talking about AI previously on the show here a couple of months back, and we actually had one caller get in touch who's an author, and she got in contact to tell us how she uses AI programs to assist with writing.
I use it for instance, if I'm stuck trying to describe a scene or thinking of another way of explaining something or describing something in a story, I'll pop it into ChatGPT, I'll ask the question, and it gives me ideas. For instance, I played with it there the other week and I just put, can you describe a scene of Mary walking into a hotel seeing her ex-boyfriend with another man? You know, what would that look like? What way would it play out? And what it gave back to me was really good.
You know, it was funny, Aisling, that really divided opinion about, you know, the idea of an author using ChatGPT to maybe just see or help describe a scene or give ideas or suggestions, because people are going out to buy a book, you know. But maybe that's the smart way. Maybe it increases productivity. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. I suppose also the thing with ChatGPT is, in a way, where it's a case of getting the first lines down on paper, isn't it? We're all kind of better editors as well. But it's, I suppose, looking at the brainstorming possibilities that these tools give you, and particularly, okay, so ChatGPT, if you engage with the free version, you're using an AI tool that has a predetermined data set. However, you can also create your own data sets. So say, for example, if an artist is to put all of their previous writing into an AI model and then train it based on their own writing, then they're essentially brainstorming with themselves. There's actually, I know you discussed music already, but there is a beatboxer from the UK called Reeps One who collaborated with Nokia Bell Labs, and he trained an AI on all of his beatboxing, and he really credits this AI tool with really helping him expand the boundaries of his practice, because it essentially gave him sounds that he would never have considered using with his voice that now he does create with his voice. So it does, I mean, I think it's a case of having a dialogue with it and seeing what can come up.
Yeah, just Kelly, your own tech correspondent, was here earlier in the week about this, Caoimhín. She sort of described it as her, it's kind of like her personal assistant, she said. You know, it's a helper, yeah, but not a tool that she lives and dies by or totally relies on.
Yeah, I mean, I can understand how it would be useful in kind of short little time-consuming tasks and that sort of thing. Going back to like how I'm a bit of a Luddite, like I do think an essential part of writing is the face-off that you have with the blank page. Yeah. So
I'm a little bit like you with that.
Yeah. No, I think almost like you have to maybe dig inside your mind or in a different way. And I guess AI gets you quicker into that flow, you know, where something is there and then you can amend it and change it and stuff. And yeah.
When you talk to your colleagues, like as a poet and cartoonist, how concerned are you at the moment, we'll say, as to where AI is and its capabilities right now?
I mean, I don't imagine any kind of breakthrough poetry coming through this, even though like I love using language from advertising and that kind of thing and like automatic writing techniques. Like I think those are fun things to experiment with. But I don't know. I would be maybe surprised if I was kind of blown away by an AI poem. But I also think like poets are particular people, but also poetry is there for everyone when they need it someday. And sometimes it might be a life experience that they
encourage, you know, other people to dabble in it maybe a little bit, Aisling? I don't know. Would it?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I think it's, you know, looking at the inspiration points that it can give people. But I think, you know, I agree with Caoimhín that I don't think it's, there needs to be intention there. And you know, that's also like the audience reading the intention in it or reading the emotion in it. But the thing is, like, you know, really good artwork is about the human-centered piece in it, you know, and actually being human is kind of imperfections. So people aren't looking for absolute perfect. And through kind of the handmade and the human creation, you get a lot of that as well.
It's been really interesting learning about the impact and capabilities of AI all week. If you're just joining us today and you've missed any of the chats we've had, whether it's about the workplace, recruitment, how it's impacting salaries at the moment, music and the arts, you can listen back. The podcast is up actually wherever you get your podcast or the Go Loud app. You'll be able to listen back to AI on Lunchtime Live. Really fascinating insights if you're looking for more information about where artificial intelligence is at the moment. Caoimhín Lavelle, he's a Dublin artist, poet, cartoonist, and Aisling Murray, director and founder of the Beta Festival. Thanks a million to you both for joining us here on the programme.
We marvelled at our own magnificence as we gave birth to AI.
Open the pod bay doors, Hal.
I'm afraid I can't do that.
It's alive! It's alive!
AI on Lunchtime Live.